being adopted, my other two sisters have a little different take that we're adopted. But for me, I felt like I belonged. Hmm. I felt loved. I felt accepted, whether I lived in another world or not. But that's the way I felt and made me very secure. I think that is part of the whole family. I almost said diaphragm. That's not the
that's something
paradigm. Yeah, paradigm. That's the paradigm. Word I wanted.
Welcome to Chasing Leviathan. Today I have Lisa Weary, homemaker, women's counselor, and my mama. really, obviously appreciate her. You gotta appreciate your mom. Just to give you some idea of her background, she has been a women's counselor for years and in different roles, but kind of provided that counseling support for my dad as he's been in various ministries. The current ministry my dad is with, Nations of Coaches, he works with Division I coaches, which is a very stressful job. So basketball, Division I coaches. And my mom provides an instrumental role in his ministry by providing kind of a supplemental, not supplemental, like counseling for the coaches' wives. So she plays kind of a side-by-side role with my dad. And, you know, coming from that, and then I'm sure in her own story she'll share, really what I want to cover today is what is family? Why is it important? And what are our responsibilities to our family? And so I think as she shares her own story and just as you understand that she deals a lot with marriage counseling, helping with kids. She helped a lot with counseling college kids.
Young women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been a big she's had a lot of experience dealing with changing roles, changing relationships, but I'll let her go ahead and talk a little bit about herself. Love you, Mama. Good to have you on here.
It's a joy to get to do this with you. I think background is important so people will know where I'm coming from as well in my own personal life. I was 2 days old when my adoptive parents picked me up from the hospital, and that was all I knew was that family, and grew up knowing that I was adopted, but always felt the love that my father and my mother provided. They had five biological children and then adopted three more from different families.
Whew.
I know we always said they were either the most amazing people or totally out of their minds, but we,
maybe both.
I think you have to be both.
Not necessarily exclusive.
No. But I grew up, had a strong relationship with my dad, was a daddy's girl, really, but dearly loved my mom. And I think with that gave me a lot of, confidence and security. Growing up. So, I find myself sometimes dealing with men and expecting them to act like my dad, who always wanted to hear what I had to say, thought it was a great idea, glad to listen. And I found that that is not the truth for all men. That's how they feel about women.
What?
Giving them some helpful instructions.
Ah, yes. So one of the exciting things about having my mom be part of the podcast is that the dogs love her. And so if we keep them outside, they scratch on the door. And if we bring them inside, they scratch on who knows what. I don't know what Maggie is scratching on, but she is scratching on something. So I'm sure Joe will do his best. Sorry, Joe. And if you hear scratching, you know what? That is the two of the three dogs that love my mom. And this is a podcast where I believe in being completely honest. I kind of hate them because they're toy dogs. It is not in my nature to love dogs that are meant to go in purses, but they're not quite that small.
It's
two Shih Tzus, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mookie and Maggie.
And yes, and Rudy though is our King Charles Cavalier, and he is not, definitely not,
no,
a purse
he's
dog.
Not. No,
we love him. Oh,
so
goodness.
Anyways, yeah.
Yes.
So we're
let that scratch you where you itch, and we'll move on. So anyway, I grew up in a family where I think I'm not sure if this is where he wants to go, but very church going, God fearing family, good relationships with each other. I thought I was the most blessed person in the world to have such a large family. I did find out later, as when I matured to adulthood and had my own family, that my sisters felt like I lived in another totally different family from their perspective. But that's just part of personality and the way we perceive things. So it's good. I think probably one of the biggest things your question is, what is family?
What is family? Mm. Why is it important?
Mm-hmm.
And what are probably one of the main things is what are our responsibilities as humans, as people, to our family? You know, we can talk about nuclear versus extended. Mm. I mean, really, I just want to hear your thoughts on it, especially coming from one, that you were adopted, two, that you have fostered,
mm-hmm.
And then you've had, you know, your own family as well. I think you have a really interesting perspective on this. If you want to talk a little bit about how you and Dad met, and then a little bit of that background, I'd love to hear that.
Sure.
I think it would be really good to hear how you think that applies to this, because I think one of the things I want to, you know, when we talk about what is family, there's obviously a biological component, and then how does that compare to adoption? And so I think providing some background to how that's made a difference for you, or what that story is of creating our family that obviously I'm part of as your son.
Essentially, I'm born, raised down South, we'll say, you know, Florida, people think of a melting pot, but true South, meaning at Florida in the middle, you know, scrub brush, down to earth, salt of the earth people.
Horse farms.
Mm-hmm. Lots of horse farms in Ocala. And great place to grow up. And where my husband, Pete, came from, typical New Englander, you know, even Norfolk, Connecticut, that little icebox up there, and then West Hartford, Connecticut. And to this day, I'm sure even in heaven, my dad is rolling his eyes and shaking his head that I married a Northerner. So
that was
a Yankee. but it's all good. He did love him. He forgave him. And,
I do love that our family's kind of split along those lines. I was born up in Connecticut, and Dad was born in Connecticut?
Yeah. Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, Drew was born in Ocala, Florida.
Yeah. Got a little north and south.
Yeah, absolutely. You were born in Ocala, right?
Jacksonville.
Uh-huh. And then they came pick you up and went and, okay.
From then on, right?
Yeah, I wasn't sure which hospital it was.
Yeah, up in Jacksonville. Anyway, and we met at college, and I have to be honest, when I met him, it was through his sister. We ended up being roommates, but he was a jerk, and I did not like him. She said, I would love it if you were my, I would love to have you as a sister-in-law. And I said, well, that's not happening. And I wouldn't even date that guy, much less marry him. So obviously ate those words, but it's all good.
Something about weary women that happened with Becky Sue too.
It's all good. I think, you know, even the melding of those two worlds, I went up and lived up in Connecticut. I was actually up there for 12 years. And for me, because they were already established up there as family and everything, I was accepted with open arms and quickly lost my Southern accent and just fit right in. Loved the area, loved it up there. Those years were wonderful. And some of the sites that I got to see, you know, and when you see calendars and, they show the fall, you know, foliage, yeah. The trees and stuff.
Yeah. A little different in Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just browner in Florida.
Yeah. You have different levels of camouflage, both in the foliage and the trees and the people. Yeah. Just like the camouflage, just everywhere. Brown and green. That's what you get.
But, that was very special. And then we came down to help, with my mom. This is my adopted mom. But I will, address her as mom because she's all I've ever known. My mom and my dad have passed away, but she had Alzheimer's and we came down and lived right next door and got to take care of her, which was my heart's desire. But I also didn't want my husband to leave a job he had been at for 11 years. Because the whole rest of the family was down here, and could help take care of her. But, as the Lord saw fit, I got to come down and we lived right next door, took care of her, in process, probably a year into it, we found out my brother had cancer and, he was turned 50 and, but he didn't look like that. He was, in good, really good shape, but ended up very aggressive. And within 4 months,
was it liver?
It was kidney.
Kidney.
Mm-hmm. Renal carcinoma. But with that, he came and stayed with us. And I think, you know, I think about you during that time. You were old enough to understand more of what was going on. Drew had just been born, maybe 6 months old, and obviously didn't have any idea what was going on. My mom was quickly slipping into that land of no return with Alzheimer's. And I can remember her coming over to the house, and she basically remembered us pretty much to the end. The other grandchildren have a lot harder time with her because they'd come and visit, and she would slowly forget their names and things. But we were part of their life every day. I remember her sitting there in our house and you walk by and she smacked you on the bottom really hard. Where would have sent the other grandchildren, you know, probably running and telling their mom. You calmly turned around with a big grin on your face and said, "Granny, what was that for?" You know, and laughed. And she just laughed and she said, "I don't know," you know. But I saw you. I saw you, learn the tenderness of caring for someone who's, you know, needs your help.
Can't return it. Yeah.
That's good. So,
yeah. And how, and so we can skip ahead, you know, mm-hmm. So you had me 9 years later, you had Drew, and that's a story and a half.
Yeah.
We can say that for another time. But, then in the last, 2-3 years, God has given you another special gift, and I was hoping you would just talk about that a little bit, because it feels a little bit, not entirely, but it feels a little bit like full circle.
Yeah. I think my brother that passed away, his son, I think probably that his passing had a lot to do with it, but his son ended up down a very dark road, and we did not hear from him. He kind of went silent for years. I think the last time I saw him when he was 18, but resurfaced. He was in ICU and not expected to live, and happened to have put down my sister's name as next of kin kind of thing. And my sister reached out that morning, one morning as I was opening a shop that I took care of and said, Josh is in ICU, not expected to live, and he has a 5-year-old daughter. She's going to go into foster care, into the system, if somebody doesn't take her.
Mm-hmm.
She said, the thing is they're going in 10 minutes, so we need to know if anybody can take them. So I quickly called.
So you had 10 minutes to mm-hmm. call dad and yeah. decide if you're going to take. Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, you don't have 2 days. You don't have 2 weeks. You don't have 2 days. You don't have 2 hours. You got 2 minutes. I need you to think about this. Are we going to accept this life, family into our life and who, whatever comes with it? Or are we going to just say, hey, just not in that stage? And, you know, we're 57, 58 at that point. So,
and you're, your youngest, Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Was just finishing up at college, so you guys were going to be complete empty nesters, able to like have a quiet house. And he was gone to college.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like you guys finally, just in the last like mm-hmm. year there, had
we're having so much fun.
Yeah,
it's good. It's really good. I highly recommend it. You know, hang in there.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I have a 3- and 5-year-old, and I can't even imagine what it would be like to have a quiet house. It's been, it feels like forever.
Yeah, and that, you know, even with that said, Nana and Baba, we love our grandchildren. It's just the best. But, you know, good part is that we rile them up, spoil them, give them lots of sugary things. No, not really, but, and send them home, and it's amazing. But anyway, yes, so our sweet Ava came to us that I called my sister. She called the worker. They called me right back and said, okay, am I understanding you were going to take her, and whatever, for however long. And I said, yes. And she said, okay, someone's going to be at your house at 2 to fingerprint you, to run, you know, background check, and you'll pick her up tonight. And that's where our story jumped off. We've always had boys, we've had boys teams. And we were in for a big awakening. Pink, purple-fied, glitter.
Unicorns.
Unicorn. No, all the My Little Ponies.
Bratz dolls?
No.
Those?
No, no. My Little Ponies. The LOLs.
The LOL dolls. Yeah.
Learned.
Oh, there's a lot I had to learn, too.
Oh, yeah.
I have 2 boys, so it is superheroes. It's just the other day, my 3-year-old ran out of bed, which he's not supposed to do. And he ran down the stairs with a blanket behind him going, I'm Batman. And he wouldn't go to bed until I acknowledged him, like, yes, you're Batman. He must have said it 5-10 times. Just, I'm Batman, Dad. I'm Batman. And I'm like, all right, you're Batman. Go to bed.
I can
different.
Totally see that.
Oh, yeah. Very different. What would you say family is? Obviously, there is that biological, obviously, there's a biological component to family, kind of a natural thing that happens when, you know, father and a yeah, but when a father and a mother, thank you. Yeah. What's that word? Mother. Okay. When a father and a mother have a kid that is their own, like, that's obviously a family, but we see families that are created all the time. We see people talking about being family, and especially coming, you know, from your story of being adopted, what would you say creates family?
I'm going to back up just a little bit in that a husband and a wife is a family.
Yeah.
You know, whether they have any more children or not, they create a whole. That those two people together make a family. And I think that's important to know that too, because some people feel like, well, I'm not having children. We don't have a family. And that's so not true.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. You know, no, thank you for pulling us back there. That's definitely, that's important.
Sure. We hear family used a lot, like basketball teams, you know, we're family.
I love that.
You know, different things. But
even some like office environments, to be honest, most office environments are like, we're family. And you're like, I hope not. I hope your family is not like this. But anyways,
I love my family. Yes. I think obviously because of our background in, you know, sovereign God and Christ followers, it's ageless what was community for God the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. There was community there, and He made us with that innate within us. And you can find that when a lot of children have problems and stuff like that, usually stems back to there was problems in their family. It wasn't, you know, we use the word dysfunctional, but we all have some degree of that, right? But
yeah, we don't need to. I mean, everyone has problems in their family. Like, you're going to have that.
That's part of it.
And one of the problems with saying dysfunctional, not that it's not necessarily true, mm-hmm. but we often can medicalize something that really is just a part of life.
It is. It is. And if you expect.
Is that a word, medicalize?
I'm going to go with it. I like it.
Go medicalize it.
You and your words.
Yeah, I don't think that's a word. I think I just, yeah, what is that Calvin and Hobbes verbing weirds language?
Yes. Oh, man. So I think it's innate within us to be community. And a family is probably, you know, you talk about inner circles, and you know, acquaintances, and then you go on out from there. But really, bottom line is it's something that's within all of us to want to belong. Hmm. And that was one of the sweetest things about me being adopted. My other two sisters have a little different take that we're adopted. But for me, I felt like I belonged. I felt loved. I felt accepted, whether I lived in another world or not. But that's the way I felt and made me very secure. I think that is part of the whole family. Almost a diaphragm. That's not the
that's something
paradigm. Paradigm. That's the word I wanted. We'll get there. Hey, I'm 58. Yeah. Right?
Well, you talk about from an American culture standpoint. Mm. How do you think in American culture, what is the value of our emphasis on the nuclear family? And obviously I have some assumptions here mm-hmm. in the way even I'm asking this question, so feel mm-hmm. free, you know, even to push back, but, Americans tend to focus on the nuclear family versus extended family. What are the strengths and what are the weaknesses of that focus?
Well, define what you mean by nuclear family and extended.
Nuclear family is father, mother, kids.
Okay.
And that's it.
Okay.
And then you have obviously your cousins and your aunts and uncles mm-hmm. and you have your grandparents. Mm-hmm. That would be extended.
Yes, thank you. Just wanted to make sure.
I was like, I just randomly, you know, like, and it said nuclear. Anyways, I digress. Okay.
I think as far as nucleus, and again, I want to bring that back to a place to belong. Obviously, when you're biological, usually mm-hmm. There's a strong connection and desire for the mother and father to see their child grow.
Yeah, there's a biological, there's hormonal and all the stuff that, like, yeah, I mean, it's well documented, yeah.
Yeah, that goes with that bond. And sometimes things get broken in that process because of different issues or things that come into play. But for the most part, I think those bonds, which is a good thing, will help us work through whatever trial, whatever, hardship, whatever, you know, personality differences, different thinking. You know this from our family. Even though Dad especially came from about 15 and came from a background where it was very conservative and, you know, the church that he grew up in, so it was kind of poo-pooed for people to give, you know, their kids too much leeway to think outside the box, that kind of thing. I, on the other hand...
Well, thankfully I fit very easily into that box. I didn't ask any difficult questions. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah, well, not until you got a little bit older, but you know.
That's true. I was a pretty well-behaved kid.
Oh, yes.
Until, you know,
oh, yes.
As a teenager, still well-behaved, yes. But the questions but I started was asking, questions. Were.
Yeah, and yeah. I think maybe Dad even felt a little bit intimidated, like, oh, you know, that's not important. Just believe. Just have faith. Which there's some truth to that, too. But I think one of the biggest components is being there. To family, you have to take time. You have to be around, and whatever revolution or evolution that went on, where maybe it's all the travel, ease of traveling, technology, being able to fly in less than a day and be somewhere. I gave freedom for families to feel like, I can live there and I can come back and see you anytime I want to. And, half a day I can be back here. But what came with that, I think, was the day-to-day magic of ordinary things is what I think. And in this day and time, you need each other. You need someone that'll stick in there when you've had a hard blow and you're a little lost. You need, Dad and I are getting older. We talk about this as well. We don't know what's around the corner. Those are important things. Being present, the ministry of presence. We're not close enough to you guys, even though we're probably about 25 minutes away.
25 minutes of horrendous traffic.
It is. We're talking Orlando I-4.
Yeah. Well, I will say, it does affect my mood whenever I see you guys. I know it affects your guys' mood. Whoever has to drive comes in and they're just a little bit stressed. Yeah. Yeah. There's a difference between that and, walking over. Yeah, for sure.
But I do feel a little guilty because I know Becky's mom and Dad would love to be that close, for them to be, y'all to be that close. So, but yeah, it's one of those things where, you open up your door and you send the grandkids down. You send the grandkids down to we're waiting down there and they're going to show us something they made or they're going to do something with us. So I just don't think you can get away from being there.
Yeah. And
being here.
And there's are you saying there's a responsibility and obligation to have those kind of connections?
I'd like to waver on that and say it's up to you, but I definitely feel there is a responsibility. I think that's the way God made us, to take care of these things. And you and I've talked about this. We are one of the few nations that don't feel that as a responsibility. And that meaning, you look at other nationalities and they take care of their elderly. They take care of their moms and dads and whatever.
Yeah, comes. One way or another. Mm-hmm. You know, literally just talking to my cousin Graham and Germany, they have a very established social medical, from cradle to grave, where you are taken care of no matter what. But then you look at other countries in Europe, like Portugal, Spain, Italy, and they maintain a very traditional multi-generational living arrangement, and that's the retirement plan. One of the things that you've kind of mentioned here, in our culture, we often have bonds, and it seems that we create relationships and bonds based on ideas and interests. And one of the things that you kind of have kind of hinted at, and maybe I'm reading too much into this, but we don't talk a lot about loyalty. I think it has a lot of negative connotations in our culture. When you say loyalty, you have to explain that it's not blind loyalty. But the idea of we don't really talk much in terms of creating, we create relationships of convenience, but not relationships between people. We create relationships for ideas, but the idea of being faithful to somebody, to a person, is, I think, not a common one in the United States. Certainly not at the popular level. You know, like the social media level,
right?
Which is slightly different from maybe the popular level. You know, like I'm sure like rural America, but I mean the truth is like most Americans don't live in the country. Like we have kind of this agrarian United States ideal that's really kind of vanishing. So a lot of times we're talking about, well, there's a, you know, rural America and there's urban America. And it's like, well, one of these is like more an idea. I mean, yes, there are people who live in rural America, but they are heavily, I don't know what the numbers are exactly. I want to say at least 80%, maybe 90% of people live in cities.
Hmm.
And that's, so when we're talking about what the culture thinks, sees, and believes, it has to be influenced by this idea of a city. Even in my, I'm part of a men's group that meets to, just to maintain some kind of community and friendship. Of those 8 guys, I think 2 of them are originally from Orlando. And so there's a lot of moving that happens with, you know, you mentioned the travel and, along with that, those 2 guys, neither of their parents are from Orlando. So you, like nobody has been here for more than their childhood. And, I don't know. Yeah, that has to have social repercussions. And that's something that we really haven't seen or dealt with as a human race because it wasn't that easy to move, you know. So I'm digressing here, but it's literally, and this is literally the difference between having jobs and having farms. So just a really, I don't know. I'm curious what you think. That was me kind of just going off a little bit here on a rabbit trail, but just coming back to, what do you think about faithfulness and relationships based on people rather than ideas? And is that part of this discussion about family?
I would say definitely a vital part of family. Now, we all know, and if you search your ancestry very far, you may find, you know, some disturbing people in your heritage.
Yeah. And you realize like how many, like you don't have to go back very far until you have like several thousand people involved in your ancestry. So you're going to find like both like, oh, like, oh, I was a nephew to Peter the Great, or, you know, like, or I was, you know, the great, 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 great grandson of Attila the Hun or something. You know, you're just like, oh, this is maybe not the best. Yeah.
Might have been a few horse thieves in there. I think. Yeah, okay, you know what? Let me go this direction with that. I'm going to take this. I hope this works for you. But in the discussion, just recently this year, through efforts of my adopted sisters, who I all of them call my sisters and brothers, right? She insisted that I went through ancestry.com. She was going to pay for it for my birthday. Wanted to find something out about my background, my boys, both of them kind of wanted to know what's going on. So I'm like, okay.
I mean, there are medical reasons too. You
that's
know,
that's true. Some, yeah. That, yes, that's true. But I felt very content and blessed. So it wasn't like I needed to, but obviously this was supposed to happen. So upon finishing that, ancestry.com, things started to pop up, and my sister was the one that actually checked in it. And I found out this past summer who my mother was, my biological mother was, and that I have 6 siblings. Names: Jackie, Audrey, that's pretty good, Larry Buck, Timbo, Anki, and Patricia.
Yep. Your North Carolina biological family. Yep.
So, you know, immediately one of the younger half brothers, I'm going to guess, half brothers, because there are 2 families involved, wanted to talk to me and gave his number to someone, and they gave it to me and said if I wanted to talk to him. So I called him, and you know, he broke down and started crying, just by, you know, the thoughts that there was family out there that he didn't know about. I think kind of to answer your question, I have this strange process going on inside of me where I can see, and I have pictures where these people do, I do resemble them. And, and so the process for me is, okay, do I owe them any loyalty? You know, my husband is like, oh no, not another big family reunion we have to go through. But I look at that and I say, there is, and I imagine when I see them face to face, there will be a strong pull and bond there, just because there is some, you know, truly some genetic and forces beyond that, that bonds. But I would definitely say there is a great point to being loyal. And we get bring it back to that.
Sure.
And asking, you know, yourself, if this is who I have been placed with in life, whether it's biologically or adoptive, these people are in my life for a reason and purpose, and that you have an obligation to see it through to the end.
But you don't feel, or how do you feel about your obligations to them versus your obligation to your adopted family?
I mean, that's totally different to me in the sense of, I've just really found out about them and I see that, you know, there's some connection because we look a lot alike and that kind of thing. But, my adoptive family, my sister just went through a horrendous surgery to remove some, colorectal, cancer. And, we were all,
that's exciting for the podcast.
Thank you. I hate for anybody to be the butt of jokes, but
yeah, exactly. Oh man.
Oh, here we go.
Oh no, no. Yeah, I don't need to crack anymore. Weary. Yeah. Oh, that terrible weary humor. Oh, yeah, this every time.
Okay. That came totally from your father. That's only what I've learned from him. We got on a docket, and I mean, we got on a Zoom call, and we were like, okay, who's taking the first week? Who's taking the second week? Who's taking the third week? So that we could be there because, she was going to be, you know, incapacitated, and she had a lot of responsibilities. Her husband has Lewy bodies, dementia, where, you know, he's very quickly digressing, and anything out of the normal just sends him for, you know, he's totally confused. So it just wasn't even a question. It's like, yeah, well, here we are. You're not doing this alone. We got to do this together, and we're working it out.
So that biological component for family really seems to be kind of like grease or oil for the machine rather than what actually makes those bonds real.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's nice to have hormones. Even my in-law, it's nice to have the hormones that make you feel close together as a family.
There we go.
Yeah. I have my in-laws who I admire very much, who have adopted a young baby at 6 months, and the babies are a lot of work, and not having the hormones for either the baby or for the mom was such a struggle. Like, it's such a choice. Then it's something that you have to really forge instead of grow, I think. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Very intentional, decided a commitment. Yeah.
And I think this brings us to a question I've wanted to ask as you've been talking. When you talk about granddaddy and you talk about why he chose to do what he did, can you tell he's the Southern grandpa, you know, granddaddy?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But you have granddaddy and granny. Mm-hmm. And even as, you know, you had 2 minutes to decide whether to take Ava, for granddaddy and granny, what was their motivation to adopt? And for you, what made you say yes to taking Ava?
Okay.
And how did, you know, I mean, I think like we'll definitely explore some, I mean, part of what makes family family, right? Like, why do we make these choices, even aside from the biological. Obvious biological ones?
Well, you might be a little disappointed. I think my mom's motivation was she loved babies, and her youngest one was 5, and she wasn't ready to be done. But as they were getting older, and Yeah, the nurse, this is back, way back in the day when this kind of thing had happened, knew that she loved babies, lived next door, and said, hey, we have someone that wants to, they're putting their baby up for adoption.
Yeah.
Know you love babies. Would you consider that? So this is kind of funny because you would expect, you know, and I'm sure, you know, her thoughts were, oh, yes, I'm going to take that little baby and I'm going to love it and I'm going to take care of it. But, you know, I think of granddaddy, really, yeah. And his would have been the somebody's in need.
Yeah.
He wasn't feeling that he needed to add any more to his already five children that he had and loved. And
yeah. It's a lot of kids.
That's enough. And, you know, I see, and I could be wrong because I can't ask him now because they've passed on, but I see in him, and I think throughout, you know, different stages of my growing up, that he made choices about commitment and why you would do something. And I feel that that came through when I called my husband and I said, you got 2 minutes. And he goes, what do you think? And I said, she's family.
Yeah.
She's family. We got to. Would you be able to sleep at night knowing that we said, oh, gosh, we just became empty nesters and we're doing what we want to do. We're having so much fun. I'm going to get to start traveling with you.
There's so many other people who could take her.
Somebody, yes. Yeah, yes. Not? Yes.
The whole, what they call the bystander effect, where if you have a group of people who can be
who's
involved,
who's going
to
do it? Yeah.
You expect someone else to do it.
Absolutely. No. Could I lay my head down at night and say, I'm okay with her being tossed around? I'm sorry. I'm going to back up on that because I met some very wonderful people that have filled the gap in for fostering. But that she
well,
would be,
there's good and there's bad
that's
in fostering.
True.
Yes.
That's
so
true.
Yeah.
But true, but I don't want
to
throw.
Right.
Yeah. Chance.
You wouldn't know who she would end up with.
Yes. And, you know, and being because her mom, was, you know,
incapacitated at the time.
And she's going to, you know, go into a program or whatever, needed time, wanted her back. It was definitely something of, you know, she could go from house to house because this was not supposed to be, you know, forever,
yeah.
Just for a short time. And then we realized also that with this came a wonderful opportunity to pour into her mother, who was not, you know, blood related at all. They did not get married. So it wasn't like we would have had an obligation to do this, but because of our beliefs, we were like, okay, this is probably a lot bigger than what, you know, just taking in a 5-year-old for however long.
Yeah. It's very, very powerful when you think about something that you mentioned earlier, just that idea of home and of belonging and providing that for someone. Because not having that does break people. That doesn't mean they still can't function, but it is a broken part, and there is no substitute for belonging somewhere. And I mean, I think this is kind of what I'm hearing from you is there is no substitute for that belonging, and it's something. There are few greater missions than greater things you can provide for someone than that. And then, of course, you have to. What's interesting. Even as you mentioned, why granddaddy and granny chose to do it, you know, they just happened to meet somebody. It's very interesting, like why you make the choice for you. It was presented to you. And because there's always more kids that need homes, but you can't give homes to all the kids. I mean, even like for people who their only mission in life is to do that. Becky Sue, my wife, knew a family that basically they ran like a foster care home out in the country for like 20 kids at a time or something. But even then, that's a drop in the bucket. So you, like, it's just an interesting, like choosing when and why to do that is, I think it's a case for wisdom of contextual, like weighing your obligations as you go. Even as we're talking about like the multi-generational thing with parents, right? And grandparents in retirement, you look at that, and there are always going to be contextual things that may drive, you know, I mean, for us, like there's a money thing involved where it's like, well, you can't just like plop down next to us, right? Like right. Like there's a lot of things in play. But it was part of our reasoning to come down here and to mm-hmm. be near grandparents. And that's why we wanted you guys to be part of our kids' lives. Mm-hmm. If there's anything, you know, kind of diverging off our current topic, but also like kind of moving on to that question of like you with the grandkids, if there is anything, what are 2 to 3 things that you want to pass on to the next generations? Not just to obviously your boys, and not even to your grandkids, but just continually, if you know, 5 generations down and you could just guarantee that they had these 2 or 3 things, what would it be?
Probably, one of the biggest things that I could say is there is nothing that takes the place of serving other people. And whatever that looks like in your life, there are many times, and I maybe because of older generation, you think about, you know, all I do is, you know, back in the day, I wash clothes, I wash the dishes, I clean the house, and I start over again tomorrow, and I keep doing. But in that, speaking love, being present. So I think one of the biggest things would be that if it's kind of like what the Bible says, when you spread your bread on the water, meaning you give out. That comes back to you, 100-fold, whether you're looking for it or not. Those kinds of things where you pour into people's lives are the things that make differences. You think about back in the day when a lot of people had so many children, several of our presidents, that kind of thing, have come from large families, but it was because a mother decided she was going to spend an hour with each kid each day. To look at them, to ask them questions, to look at their physical, to look at their eyes, and listen to them, and look into their soul. And so I just see that taking the time to pour into people's lives, taking the time to serve people, is huge, because if we live out a selfish life, you die very, very lonely. Mm. And you may have a lot of people around you, but it is that contradictory pouring out of yourself that makes you so full.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can't, faithfulness is really inefficient when viewed from a time and money perspective in our current culture, right? Faithfulness, you just stay where you are, you be where you are, you spend time with people, and in a lot of ways, like you deal with plants, like there is no fruit till the very end. And it is funny, like I'm even in the small amount of time that I've been alive, seeing what 10 years of faithfulness does versus like, well, I gave them this and then I got nothing in return. Even in my parenting, like doing stuff for a year or two and like it didn't do anything the first couple months. And now all of a sudden I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad I have been doing that. You know, it's finally coming back around. And, a lot of times we want to treat people like they're objects that can be manipulated or mathematical equations, and people take time and they don't, make sense.
Good. Yeah.
Or they rarely make sense. Yeah. Like sometimes you're like, okay, that makes sense. Yeah, but there's a lot of times you're just like, yeah. You know, I'm trying to figure out what kind of sense my 3-year-old makes, because, you know, my 5-year-old, I can have very, like, even when he was younger, I could have clear discussions about like what is expected from him and what he expects from us. You know, he just like, you know, it was simplistic, but it made sense. And man, Soren Keats, my 3-year-old, he...
Different drummer.
I don't know what makes him tick. I'm just still trying to figure it out. You know, and that
be assured that time that you are putting and pouring into him
and the thought, because it occupies a large part of my brain.
Yeah. No, and people don't understand that. That's why some women go to work, because they don't want what, you know, if they don't have to. I'm saying it is a hard job to literally look at and care for and use your brain, because kids are different and you pour into them. So, but that, you know, I want to say kindness. I want to say be gracious, be forgiving. Those things do us well and bonds and, making family. You know, I say I support your dad. I've done that all my life in a sense of, sometimes financial, just, you know, helping make, you know, ends meet or whatever. But he always allowed me to be home with you boys until you went to school, you know, whatever. And I say, you know, have I done anything? Well, my husband safely trusts in me, and look at my boys. Amazing.
Mama, you stop it. Now, you mentioned this. I see a lot of families that tear themselves apart because they talk in terms, not even of responsibility, but of obligations. And they talk about what other people owe them as family instead of having that mindset of service and that of faithfulness. And you can get taken advantage of, but, and you have to be, you know, you have to be on guard against that, just because you can actually hurt the other person by quote unquote giving too much. I think a lot of times that comes out of a fear of losing that other person. Yeah. Like if you are giving too much, your priorities are probably out of whack as well. But if everyone is on the same page of like, what can I give to the family? And what can I do to create this home, this sense of belonging? There's no substitute for a group of people who are willing to work towards that common purpose of creating a special community like that. And it really is funny how even like the word community is a buzzword, and we talk about it, but it doesn't have the same punch, the same power as family. And I don't think there's really a substitute for those people who at its very core is like, essential to who you are and essential to your sense of belonging.
I know if you don't have it, I do know that wreaks havoc on so many. I come back to the roots of it, and that was what we were created for. Yeah. And God did that on purpose with the hormones and all the things that come with it. It was supposed to be part of it. And then when he brings people into your life, and I think you said something about being very guarded, or that's not the word you used, but you talked about when things happen and the question is put to you about, you know, what are you going to do about the situation or whatever. It's really important. Again, yes, it does have to do with what's going on contextual. I think you said what's going on and everything, because, you know, if they're medically where you cannot handle what they have to have, obviously those are reasons and things like that. Or where you live, we lived way up north and my father's from Florida, and we talked about after my mom passed away, would we bring him up there? He'll be away from Florida's all he's ever known. His doctors, what he was used to, he loved it hot. He said the hotter it is, the better. Well, we lived up, you know, an hour and a half above Green Bay, and he would have been indoors 9 months out of the year, which would have been torture for him, because he's a gardener and he loved the garden, and it would be the wrong thing. But thankfully we had some other options with, you know, family that lived down here. But I get that. But again, sometimes you pick up and you move down and you leave what you have, and you go and you make that sacrifice to take care of. That's part of it.
Because you see yourself as part of that whole, of that family.
Yeah.
It's really, really something.
Special.
Thank you, Mom. Really appreciate you talking to me about this.
It's been awesome. I love you, bud.